And we're back with Gabriel Mann on Is Good on killradio.org. So we were going to talk about some of the differences and the challenges of recording an album and playing live. Let's start with recording an album. You're saying you produced this all yourself.
Mm-hmm. You know, I had some people around telling me what to do occasionally, but I would generally tell them that that was a bad idea.
Was there... Did you feel there was more freedom in the sense that, oh, if you mess up, you can just, you know, get it till you get it right? Or did you feel constrained because you weren't getting the feedback from the audience as a performer?
Like
when you're recording a song with the intention of putting it on the CD.
Okay.
Do you miss having the live audience there to sort of fuel you? Or is it almost better because you're putting together the perfect track, you know?
I just view them as entirely different animals. So maybe the latter. I mean, like... I actually sort of have a philosophy that about live versus recorded, and that philosophy is that when you play live, you have a distinct advantage over your record, which is that you're there physically, in front of the people, so they can see how much effort you're putting into it and how you feel about it, and you can. You know, if they can't see it, you can tell them, like, beforehand or after, you know, what it's about or whatever. And these are opportunities that don't exist in the recorded form. I mean, there's so many other things that go into it, like the smell of the room and, like, the fact that they're liquored up and, like, you know, the cigarette smoke and, like, the lights. I mean, there's a live event is... And mainly it's that you're physically there with them. You're in the room with them. So to me, you have to make, I've always thought of your record as like, you got to like kind of pull out all the stops because you're not there in the room. So
you can't defend your music.
Yeah. Well, not just that, but like your live situation has all these advantages, right? You have all these things that you can do to like win over the audience. But when they take the record home and it's just them in the room, then you're not there. So all you've got is how it sounds. So you have to make it sound like something that's going to blow their mind open, I think.
It's true. I never really thought about it because like you have an opportunity when you're playing live to win over the audience in a way that,
in
that
totally
isn't
different
necessarily
ways.
Related to your music.
Yeah,
you could tell a joke or be wearing a really cool outfit or
that's
whatever.
That's exactly right. And I appreciate that. And when I go see bands that just play their record down like it sounds, it kind of makes me angry. And I used to sort of feel oppositely about it, I think. I used to want them to play the record down like it sounded on the record because the record sounded so good. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to do that. When you play live, like at least if you go to see a band many times, you kind of want it to be different than the record. You want to have a different experience. Anyway, so when I make a record, at least I just try to make it sound really good. And as good as I can make it so that people get into it on a different level than they do when I play live.
Well, let's talk about you playing live. When did you start taking the Gabriel Mann act out into the world and exposing yourself to a live audience?
I guess it was maybe like 7 years ago or so.
And the very first time that you did it, were you extremely nervous? Did you think you were going to fail? Or
well, I had played like a show of my own music when I was in college. So, but excluding that event, the first time that I played out with a band here in LA, which was like basically the first time I played like music that I thought was pretty good, and some of those songs that I played that night, I probably still play now, on occasion. We played out at this place called Bar Deluxe in Hollywood. Bar Deluxe does not exist anymore, and I think it closed a few weeks after we played there. But it was like totally insane. I was like super nervous, and it was probably a terrible show, but I think more people were at that show than like any LA show I've done since then, with rare exception, because like I called everybody that I knew. And they were all there, you know, to see that first show. And then after that, you know, I had to, like, build a real fan base out of people that actually care.
What are some of the venues you've been playing at around L.A.?
Well, I used to play at The Mint all the time. before it like closed down for a year and then reopened. And I haven't been there since they reopened, but I will go back there. Usually I play now at like the Hotel Cafe with the rest of the singer-songwriter community of Los Angeles and various famous people who come through who want the cachet of the Hotel Cafe. And I also play a lot at this place called Room 5, which is above. I'm playing there tonight. It's above a restaurant on La Brea, and my friend Jay Nash sort of like found this place, I guess, maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
I've been there. It's a cool place.
It's a great place.
It's small, but it has its own bar right there.
That's exactly right. It's like a mini hotel cafe. It's like what the hotel cafe would be if you like, well, at this point, if you like sliced it in a quarter kind of. And it's great. It's got like, it's a great place. It's like a real listening room, you know, and in the same way that the hotel cafe is. Like you go in and like there's that door, and once you're in the door, it's like people are there listening to music. And Room 5 is that same way. It has like a real way of sort of drawing your attention to the stage.
That's a very intimate environment. Mm-hmm. You've also played much, much larger scenes. You opened last year for Alanis Morissette.
Yes.
Tell me about that experience, and which do you prefer for the kind of artist that you see yourself in an intimate setting or in the larger grand setting?
Well, I mean, if I had my druthers, I would do both. They really are like totally different experiences, and there are some shows that I've had in very big venues that have been crappy, and some shows that I've had in very small venues that have been just like, you know, fantastic shows, and vice versa. I mean, I kind of feel like you can have a crappy show anywhere and you can have a great show anywhere.
Right.
And you know, no matter how many people are there, but, you know, they each have their own, there's a totally different, thing when you're playing for, you know, 10,000 people. You don't, you know, you see like the first row, you can see their faces and you can really sort of get a feel for who those people are. But after you go past the first row and your eyes sort of start to wander into the rafters, and there's not a real, you become sort of, I think, a little more of an actor, because, you know, your movements have to be large in order for people to see what you're doing. And there's usually a video camera on you for the people that are in the back. There's these big, you know, projections of you in the back. I mean, it's just like a total, like, it's crazy. It's like a real show, like a big, I mean, I don't know, you know, at the same time, like when you go to see U2, he somehow develops this very intimate relationship with his audience. And it's 'cause he talks to them, I think. Which, when we were opening for Alanis Morissette, we didn't really have an opportunity to do. We had half an hour. So, like, I wanted to give them as much music as I could in that half hour and, you know, give them a little bit of, like, German or Dutch that I had learned that day, and so that I could try to sell some records after the show, essentially. And, but, you know, they were great shows. They were really, it was like, totally, you know, the best thing about it, I think, from you know, indie musician point of view, is they carry your gear onto the stage and you sort of show up and you do your sound check and you eat the catering that Alanis provided, which was fantastic. And you hang out with her band and you just sort of, you're like a real rock star. It's that's awesome.
Unlike here where I made you carry your Wurlitzer flight of stairs.
Exactly. Unlike here where we're at the corner of Beverly
and Ghetto Street.
And it's like, you know, yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah.
And my brother's carrying the amp. And
well, I'm doing a horrible job of allowing you to get as much music into the interview as possible.
Not at all. I much prefer talking. And that's the thing that I was going to talk about, actually. My live show has become much more about talking.
Really?
Yeah. Decided to get away from music altogether.
Well, now I really must ask you to play me a song then.
Okay. So we're probably not going to do 5 live. We'll probably maybe get to 4, maybe even.
Probably 4,
okay,
yeah.
So I'm going to do... I'm going to do a new song. This is called California Rain. It is not on any of my records, but it will be on my next record.
You're listening to Is Good on killradio.org, and my guest is Gabriel Mann. ¶¶
Here comes fall, orange and yellow leaves float down from the trees that touch my window. Shrunken small, I am but a fool, looking for a breeze to take me along. It makes it hard to see, it's a blur, and the storm is almost here. So come and take a hold of me, my dear. You are in control, I disappear, and nothing that I say will interfere with the California rain. Ooh. I knew it all, knew just what to say. I knew how to play till you were playing. And so I crawled, you're over my head, and everything is just out of reach. So come and take a hold of me, my dear. You are in control, I disappear, nothing that I say will interfere with the California rain. I'm sorry, I'm blinded by fear. So come and take a hold of me, my dear. You are in control, I disappear, and nothing that I say will interfere with the California rain, the California rain. Hey,
it's true that nothing can interfere with California rain. It never rains.
That's right.
And then it rains for like 2 weeks straight.
There's a song in there somewhere, I think.
Yeah. Where can people get your music? That's a good
CD Baby has been very good to me. It's all CD
people
Baby
love
all the time.
CD Baby. All the artists I've had in here. Almost all of them.
I love it too. It's just simple. You send them your stuff, and then people go there and buy it, and they send it to them. It's the greatest thing ever. What a concept.
I wonder why it's so complicated everywhere else.
I know. It seems that way, right? It's because everybody else tries to get into all kinds of other crap, like, you know, like, I don't know, like compilations and like internet radio bullshit and stuff like that. no, I don't know. I don't know why. It's like it's such the simple website, and it looks great, and it's very easy to find stuff. Anyway, whatever. CD Baby, iTunes, and if you go to my website, you can go to CD Baby and iTunes from there.
Uh-huh. And what is your web presence?
GabrielMann.com. I have a MySpace
page. GabrielMann.com. That's yeah. Man with two N's.
You got it. So yeah, GabrielMann.com and MySpace.com/GabrielMann.
Did you build that the GabrielMann.com yourself? Do you do a lot of promotional work for yourself?
Yeah. I mean, you know, myself, meaning like I told somebody to do it and gave them some money and they did it. I didn't design it or anything. I sort of had an idea of what I wanted it to look like, but a friend of mine named Kevin McKeever did the site, and my sister-in-law Susie Bloom did the artwork on my latest record and on that website. And
do you spend a lot of time promoting yourself, getting people to hear Gabriel Mann, or do you kind of rely on your live performances to build your audience?
I wouldn't say I spend a lot of time, because I know people that really spend a lot of time. I spend a decent amount of time, I would say. But, you know, I also, like, I don't make my living from doing this. I make my living writing music for, like, video games and TV shows and stuff like that. So I do that a lot of the time. Uh-huh. And this is, you know, something that I want to do and always will do. And, you know, if hopefully one day it becomes something that I have to do more than I do it now, then I will.
Do you see this taking over your current?
I don't know. Gig? I swear to God, it's like really confusing being a musician. I think that, like, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. I don't really know what's going to happen tomorrow, actually. Actually, that's not true. I know what's happening until about mid-September. But trying to predict, you know, which direction my career or lack thereof will go is difficult. You know, I mean, I think that I would like to be playing more shows and touring the world, but I won't do it on any terms. I'll only do it in specific situations. Uh-huh. Like, I would open for Alanis Morissette anytime.
So that was a good experience through.
Yeah,
through.
That was like through and through all good. Even though, you know, we didn't really make much money doing that. We basically covered expenses, which were extremely high because it was in Europe and we had to bring gear and it was just insanity. So the expenses were high and you know, we would make money on the shows, but it would mainly cover expenses. Anyway, the reason that I would do that is because it was a great experience, and mainly because we were playing for a lot of people and we got a lot of... we, you know, gained fans. And to me, that's what it's about. If I can get more people to hear my music, then that's great, you know. And I get more satisfaction out of this than I do most other things, most other creative outlets in my universe, which is not to say that I don't get a lot of satisfaction out of them. Like writing music for video games, like I just finished a game with a partner and we did a bunch of music for this game called Spyro, and it's all orchestral, like fully orchestral, and there's like a choir, and we like recorded this choir in a church. I mean, that's like,
that's
are good
cool.
times.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want to not do that. I want it all. I want to do everything. I want a family, and I want a house, and I want to play music, and I want to tour the world, and I want to be able to write music, and I want to conduct, and I want, like, I want to sing, you know, I want all those things.
And if I cure cancer along the way, you know what, fine.
Exactly. Pretty much anything you could do in music is what I want to do. Not at the expense of anything else. I want to do them all the time.
Well, do some more for us, because I don't want us to run out of time and not get as much music out of you as I can. So what do you have? What are you going to play for us now?
Well, should I do something like happy or something sad?
I would like to hear both.
Oh my God.
If you have any bipolar music.
I don't have any bipolar.
Okay, well then we'll do two songs then.
Okay, fine. Okay, this is a song called Okay Alone. And it's really not a happy song, but it sounds happy. I opened up your letter when things were looking good. You said goodbye in glitter. I guess I knew you would be the kind with hearts in her eyes. You're the junior prom queen in disguise. You can go. And now that I know that I will be okay alone. I took you out to dinner, romance and candlelight. two pills and bottled water to suppress your appetite. It's the way your telephones ring when I'm sharing an epiphany. You should go, and now that I know that I will be okay alone, 'cause you made me feel like I was someone you loved for real. And now I find that you're handing out your candy valentines all over town. What a sweet letdown. You made me feel like I was someone you loved for real. And now I find that you're handing out your candy valentines all over town. Well, repeat that down. So I tore up your letter. No reason to remember, so easy to forget all the times you straightened my hair. And now I stay home watching Millionaire all day. I think I could say that I will be okay alone, 'cause you made me feel like I was someone you loved for real. And now find that you're handing out your candy valentines all over town. Well, I will be okay alone. Okay alone. I'm on my own.
Where'd you learn to sing? And did you develop a vocal quality that you think of as distinctly your own?
Oh, that is such a big question. I don't know. You know, I never took like singing lessons until last year. And the reason that I took them was because I knew I was going on the road for a little while and I didn't want to kill myself. I mean, I wanted to be able to sing every night.
You want to destroy your voice trying to sing for 10,000 people.
Yeah, exactly. So I took lessons before I did that, and that seemed to help a little bit. And but in terms of like singing songs, I still kind of feel like I'm figuring out how I like to sing. My dad was a cantor, so, if you listen to him sing, he sounds, I sound nothing like him. I have a much higher sort of general pitch to my voice. He's basically a bass, but he can sing like as high as I can sing. But like when he sings high, it sounds like nothing. When I sing high, I sound like I'm like breaking the universe. Mm-hmm. And but he's like got a really thick, deep voice. Anyway, whatever. So I can't really say that I learned to sing from him because we sound so different. But maybe I don't know.
Must
maybe
be in your genes at any rate.
I guess so. Like my mom sings also, and in some ways I feel like I sound more like her. But you know, my dad was always like the singer in the family. You know, at least from other people's perspective. So I don't know. I mean, he's got an incredible voice, and I think that in terms of like his ability to sort of command the room, I always admire that about how he sings.
Well, and that's essential to being a cantor as well.
Yeah, and he was the cantor in an Orthodox synagogue.
Wow.
So there was no amplification, and his voice would just like boom across the room, and I can't really do that. but but uh, but I also, like, in terms of, like, making records, I think making records has made, has changed how I sing, because for the better. Like, I think that if we play a song from my new record, which I don't even know if we have time for anything.
Yeah, actually, I don't want to rush you. We are running out of time. I want to make sure I get that other song out of you, the live song.
We might have to come back. Okay, yeah. Well, let's do that. And then, anyway, I was just going to say that I think that making records change. When you listen to how you sound on the record, you're like, oh, I didn't like how I did that.
Uh-huh.
And then I think I've changed. I've tried to be a little more subtle and a little less over the top. I think I used to kind of blow it out a little too much.
Well, I mean, that's important to be able to hear yourself and to be able to learn from yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So what is this? What is this next song?
This next song sounds sad, but it's really happy. It's called When We Are One, and actually, there's a funny story about this song. There's a group in there's a high school in the Valley, John Burroughs High, which is in Burbank, and they have like this huge music program, and somehow I like knew people who taught there, and I've played there before, and like I'm huge at Burroughs. Anyway, so they
killed in Burbank.
Yeah, so they and it's great, you know, they're great kids, and I love going there, and it's like being a rock star. And they have a big singing group, like 40 or 50 kids, and they sang a version of this song. So unfortunately, we don't have them here in the studio today.
Well, you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org, and my guest is Gabriel Mann.
Hey, do I need to give my brother the keys to move the car?
Probably.
I'm going to put them right here.
Because it's going to turn four and they'll tow it, yeah. Yeah, but they're going to, at four, you have to actually move it.
See ya.
So just take it around the corner to New Hampshire.
That's my brother Jeremy.
Good thing you brought him along.
From Israel.
He
made
roadie.
It all the way to move the car from Israel. I call you up for the lamplight. Confess to you like a sister. Not even an image of you for company. And I would sit there for hours, waiting for you to finish. But your mountains and rivers away from me now. Me now, but you know your power and you turn it on like you done it all before. You pull away just when you know that I need you. And you're so laid back when you twist me and I crack. But there's a moment when distance is done, when we are one. And I have one vivid memory of meeting you in the summer. You were not very much younger than you are. You sang to me like a siren. You came and made me your prisoner. But I know you're a friend and a foe to me now, to me now. But you know your power and you turn it on like you done it all before. You pull away just when you know that I need you more.
you're so laid back, when you twist me and I crack, but there's a moment when distance is done, when we are one. When a we when a we when there's a moment when distance is done.
Gabriel, thank you so much for coming in. That was incredible.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Where can people go see you live next? Tonight they can see you at Room 5.
Tonight at Room 5 at like 8:30, and we're there till late. And
then in a couple of weeks you'll be at Hotel Cafe.
Hotel Cafe with the Conquistadors on the 12th of October. And then I don't have anything on the books for a little bit, but I'm going to book something.
I'm sure somewhere. I'm sure you will. So check out GabrielMann.com and MySpace.com/GabrielMann, and we'll leave you with a track from your latest CD, which is available at CDBaby.com. You've been listening to Is Good on KillRadio.org, and my guest has been Gabriel Mann.
Everyone says it's your heart, not your head, that brings you where you need to be. And I know I've read, but I'm feeling misled, and I don't know how much I believe, 'cause my head aches when your love takes me deep underground. The earth quakes and my heart awakes, 'cause you got to go up to go down. And in my defense,